So what I'm going to talk about will be on the archive very soon, so it should appear next week, I guess. And it builds on a previous paper that is already available, which is this one. So I'm going to talk about an approach which provides a first principle derivation of the Y system of ADS-CFT. So the presentation, the computation I will describe is about ADS-5, CRT-S5. But I put an S at systems there because I believe the same computation can be generalized with very little efforts to other realization of the ADS-CFT correspondence where integrability is expected to show up. So first, let me just set up the stage. So I'm going to talk about type 2B string theory on ADS-5, CRT-S5, which is the same thing as an equal four super Young-Mills. And of course, the reason why we are there is essentially that in the planar limit, then integrability shows up. And in this talk, I focus about the spectrum problem, so the problem of computing the spectrum of conformal dimension in the gauge theory, or equivalently, the spectrum of the string states. So this problem is believed to be solved, essentially. So there is this Y system that has been proposed first by Kromov, Kazakov, and Viera, and that is believed to provide a solution to this spectrum problem. So for me, actually, I will use this form for the Y system. You can rewrite it in terms of these T functions, and this is also called the Hirota equation. And so the idea is that for each state in your theory, you have one solution to this set of equation, and that if you know the solution, it's easy to compute the energy from it. So there are good reasons to believe that this proposal is correct, so that this Y system gives indeed a solution to the spectrum problem. First of all, it reproduces what we knew before, so essentially the asymptotic based on that, but it does better than that. It gives you the correct semi-classical string spectrum at large dot coupling. And maybe the most impressive check was that it gave correct prediction for additional corrections to the dimension of the Konishi operator, both at small and at large Toft coupling. So I think we can be quite confident that this indeed gives a solution to the spectrum problem. But if we want really to claim that we have this solution, it would be nice at that point to have a solid derivation of the validity of this set of equation. Yeah, so that's what I'm going to talk about. Yeah. This should be clear during the talk, and if it's not, please ask me again. But yeah, so there is a derivation of this set of equation in the literature, which used the thermodynamic Bethe-Ansatz approach, which was reviewed by Sergei this morning. So this derivation was performed by this three group of authors. And it's a very nice and very successful story. But I just want to point out at that point that it's not completely satisfactory as a rigorous derivation, and I have to thank Sergei for the last slide of his talk because he made that point very clear. This derivation relies on some assumptions that are very difficult to check. So he has a nice list of conditions. I only have reproduced a few there, so you have to assume quantum integrability of your theory to start with. You have also to make this string hypothesis that he says is essentially impossible to prove. And even if you assume that, then the TBA derivation only works for the ground state, and then you have to use this contour deformation trick to get the spectrum for the excited state. So this is not what I will talk about. I will take a different approach, which has the advantage of being first principles. The primary supposition is that we will do perturbative computation only. And if you want, what I'm going to talk about is closer in spirit to the work of Bajanov, Lukianov, and Zamolodzhikov for the minimal models, even if the picture I will end with is a bit different. Maybe. Okay, so this is the plan of the talk. First, I will explain the strategy of the derivation. Then I will say a few things about the theory I'm going to work with. I will introduce some line operators in this theory and try to define them in the quantum theory, dealing with the issue of ultraviolet divergences. Then I will compute the fusion of these line operators, and from this computation, I will derive the T system. and then I will conclude. Okay, let me begin with the strategy of this proof. So we want to derive these T systems. Let me say a bit more about this. So it's a bilinear system in these T functions that depend on a spectral parameter U that is shifted plus or minus one there. And this T function, they depend on two integer labels, A and S, that take value in this famous T-shaped lattice. So these two integers, they label rectangular Young tableau, so you can associate this T function with some representation of the global symmetry group, which is PSU 2.2/4 in our case. And it's expected that these T functions are related to the special operator, which is the transfer matrix of the underlying theory. So this has been made a bit more precise in this inspiring paper by Kromov, Kazakov, and Suboy. So this connection can be made precise in some kind of classical limit for this T system. So the transfer matrix is, by definition, the supertrace of the monotromy matrix, and the monotromy matrix is this element, so it's the pass-order exponential of the loop integral of some connection. The monotromy matrix is an element of the supergroup, so the transfer matrix is essentially a supercharacter. And it's well known that supercharacters of PSU 2.2/4 satisfy this bilinear identity, so it's a mathematical fact. And these are the representation, of course, that appears in the T system. So you can see that if you start from your T system and you neglect all the shifts, then what you get is essentially this character identity. So this suggests that the shift should come from some kind of quantum effect. Okay? The obvious question is, what kind of quantum effect is it? So this is the proposal. We will take the identification between this T function and the transfer matrices seriously. So for us, the T system is really going to be an operator identity in the quantum theory. Okay? And then the idea is that the product of these T's is going to be the fusion of line operators. And then the shift should come from some quantum effect in the process of fusing the line operators. So this is the picture. This is the T system. The product there, denoted by this small triangle, is understood as the fusion of line operators. And so if you want, this is like the picture that we should have in mind. This cylinder is like the worksheet, so describe the closed strings. You have two line operators on this worksheet. And when you fuse them, then, well, you should have this following identity. So this is our starting point. This is a proposal. And what I will show in the following is that this picture is indeed correct up to first non-trivial order at strong coupling. So more precisely, I'm going to compute the leading correction in this process of fusion and show that it has the right form to give you the first non-trivial term when you take this shift to be small with respect to these shoes. All right? Does it answer your question, Matthias? Sorry, I cannot understand. You're talking about analyticity property?
I mean, of course, it sounds very nice to derive from the way you said this shift, but I mean, we know that these kind of difference equations more or less describe any integrable system with that symmetry. So the really non-trivial input is the analyticity.
Yeah, so that would be a second step. I'm only going to make the first step in that, mm-hmm. Okay. In that talk. Yes,
I don't want to hold up the talk, so please.
Okay. Yeah. Good. So let me proceed. If the strategy is clear now, I'm going to talk about the computation. So first, let me say a few words about the theory I'm going to work with, which is the theory living on the worksheet of the string. So to describe string theory in IDS5, CSS5, I'm going to use the pure spinner formalism. And the reason of this choice is essentially that it will be convenient for me to be able to work with full covariance in the target space. So this theory is simply a sigma model on this famous coset, PSU 2,2/4 divided by SO5 times SO4,1, that is coupled to the so-called pure spinner ghost. The action is the following. The first line is just the usual action for a sigma model on a coset. And the J's are just the usual Maurer-Karton currents that you decompose according to the Z4 grading of the least super algebra. And then the second line contains the ghost variable. So these lambdas are the pure spinner ghost. The W's are their complex conjugate. And these N's are some Lorentz current associated with this ghost. And the coupling constant will be denoted R square, and it's like the radius of the target space. So this theory is known to be at least classically integrable. Indeed, you can build a one-parameter family of flat connection, which is simply a linear combination of the matter current and the ghost current. This was done by Valilio, generalizing the famous result of Benna, Polchinski, and Reumann for the Green-Schwarz string. This, this connection are flat, so you can build the monodromy matrix as the pass-order exponential of the loop integral of this connection, and this encodes an infinite number of conserved charges. So this is classical. We want to do something in the quantum theory, so we need to understand the quantum properties of this operator, which means that we need the quantum properties of these currents, and these are coded in the current-current OPEs. So these OPEs are the elementary tool that we are going to use in the computation. Their structure is quite simple. When you bring two currents close one to the other, then you get some second-order poles that come with the identity operator, and then a bunch of first-order poles that come with some additional currents, and then some subleading terms that are not going to play any role for us. So these OPEs have been computed at tree level by, well, at least these people a few years ago, and the second-order poles have been computed at one loop more recently. And later, we will do some computation perturbatively in the coupling constant. We will work at strong coupling, which means that the radius is going to be large, so the small parameter will be r^-2. And a nice feature of these OPEs is that all the terms that appear there are of order r^-2, which means that when we want to do a computation at order p, we just have to take p OPEs, and that's it. Okay. No, that's the advantage of the pure spinner formalism. You don't need to go to the line congruence. You can work in the conformal gauge. So now let me introduce the line operators I'm interested in and try to define them in the quantum theory. So the line operator, let's take the simplest case of a Wilson line, which is the pass-order exponential of the integral of a connection along a given interval. If you want to make sense of it, it's convenient to expand the exponential, and you get a sum, and the sum runs over the number of connections that is integrated along the contour. So we have these operators integrated on the contour, so it's easy to see that sometimes they will get close to each other. You will have some collision, also at least on some domain of the integration domain. And when two operators collide in a quantum theory, you get something singular. So this is going to give you some divergences. If you want to make sense of this line operator in the quantum theory, you need to regularize the divergences and then probably renormalize the operators so that the divergences cancel. So at that point, it seems that we have a choice of what method we want to use to regularize the divergences, but we want to make a clever choice. The good choice, it turns out, will be to use a principal value regularization scheme. So let's consider, for instance, a contour at constant time. We take two connections on this contour. They go close to each other, so we have to consider the OPE, which is singular. And the good way to regularize it is to shift the connection a little bit in time by a given value epsilon, which will be our regulator, in a symmetric way. Okay? So it's very simple. For instance, if I isolate a simple pole in this OPE, so it's like 1/σ, we regularize it in the following way by a shift of plus or minus epsilon, and what you get is what is called the principal value of this function. Now that we have our scheme, we can do some computation, and at least at first order, compute what are the divergences in the line operator. So we identify three sources, essentially. When two connections collide, well, the first order pole in the OP is going to give you some divergences. The second order pole is also going to give you some divergences. And then there is a third source, which is when three connections collide at the same time, and you consider the OP between the two external ones. So in that case, only the second order pole contributes to the divergences. The very nice feature of the theory we are working with is that if you compute three of these guys, so one like that, one like that, and one like that, and you add them, you get zero. So locally, all these divergences cancel. The only thing is that if you consider all possible ways in which you take this kind of OPEs, then you have less of these, which gives you some kind of boundary effect. So at the end of the day, you end up with the following divergence, at least at first order. So it's a logarithmic divergence. These W's are just the line operator you started with, and you have to multiply it on the right and on the left by two generators of the Lie algebra contracted. So actually, this is this index I gives you the grade, so the Z for grade. So for each grade, you have a different coefficient. Okay, so this is divergence, but it is a nice divergence because it's easy to cancel it with some kind of wave function renormalization. Now let's look at the monotromy matrix. So there is something new there because the starting point and the end point of the integration contour are the same. So when you take two connections sitting on either side of the starting point, then they can also lead to some divergences. So this gives you a new source of divergences. So the transfer matrix, the monodromy matrix still has some divergences. Maybe there's a bit of confusion in the literature on that point. But they take the following form. So this is like what we had before. So the monodromy matrix multiply on the right and on the left by some kind of Casimir operator. And these new terms gives you this new divergence where the monodromy matrix is taken in between two generators contracted. So what is very nice is that when you take the supertrace of these divergences, you see that you find zero, which means that the transfer matrix, which is really the object we are interested in, does not have any divergences, at least at first order in perturbation theory. This result was first derived by Mikhailov and Schaffer and Namecki a few years ago. And essentially, the main reason why it's happened is that our supergroup has a nice property, which is that the dual Coxeter number is zero. So this is a crucial point. Okay. Now, remember that the strategy we have to derive the T system is to interpret the T function as the transfer matrices and the product of this function as the fusion of transfer matrices. So now I'm going to show you the computation of the fusion of some line operator. So the process of fusion is very simple. You just take two line operators, and you bring the contour on top of each other, right? The two line operators can be taken with different value of the spectral parameters and in different representation, doesn't matter. And this process, I will denote it with this small arrow symbol. So if you neglect all kind of quantum effects, this is very simple. But of course, in a quantum theory, it's a bit more complicated. You have connection sitting on each contour. When you bring the contour on top of each other, you will have singularities when this connection collide. And this is going to give you some quantum effect to the process of fusion that we want to compute. So I will not be able to give many details about this computation because the formula gets very soon very big and unreadable. But at least I want to explain how to do the computation because it's not something that you can find in textbook. So let's consider two line operators, and let's consider one connection on the first contour and another connection on the second contour. And when they go close to each other, we consider the OPE between these two connections. So in this OPE, this OPE gives the quantum correction associated with the process of fusion, but it's not completely straightforward. We have to extract somehow the part that is interesting for us. And the right way to do it has been understood first, I think, by Mikhailov and Schaffer and Namecki. And the idea is very simple. You just take this term, and you write it as a term which is symmetric under the exchange of the two contours. and another one that is anti-symmetric. So this is just a trivial rewriting. But now the symmetric term, you see that it's nothing but the OPE of two connections in this double line operator when you regulate this OPE using the regularization scheme that I introduced before. Okay? So this part does not care about the fact that you're bringing the contour on top of each other. It belongs to the result of fusion, if you want. So this is not the interesting part for us. The interesting part is this one, and this anti-symmetric part is going to give the quantum correction associated with fusion. To make things a bit clearer, let's just consider a first-order pole in this OPE, so it's following one. We will write it in this symmetric and anti-symmetric way. So this is just the principal value of this first-order pole that I discussed before. And if you look at this term, you will find that it's essentially a regularization of the delta function. And this is very nice because it means that once you integrate over the position of this connection, this will give you a finite result, which you will interpret as a quantum correction associated with the process of fusion. So this was maybe a bit, okay, the picture is a bit, maybe it was not completely clear, but the upshot is the following. If you want to compute quantum correction in the process of fusion, what you need to consider is the OPE between two connections, but you don't want the full OPE, you want the OPE when you remove this principal value part, so the symmetric part, and what you are left with is only the anti-symmetric part, which is just the commutator of two connections. You can compute these commutators when you know the OPEs between currents, and in our case, it can be written in the following form, so it's a canonical RS system introduced by Maya in the 80s. So the second order poles in the current-current OPEs gives you this so-called non-intralocal term, which comes with a derivative of the delta function. And this S is just a constant matrix. And then the first order pole in the current-current OPEs gives you this ultralocal term, so this delta function that can be written in terms of the connections again, and this R and S matrices. So these R and S matrices are just constant matrices, again, that the exact expression is not so important. It's just that yeah, they come with these Casimir-like operators where you have two connections taking in the two representations associated with each connection. And this, these generators are just contracted. Okay, so now let me just say a bit more about how we do the computation. You start from two-line operator. You expand the exponential, so you get a double sum over the number of connections integrated on both contours. We want first to discuss the computation at first order, which means that you have to take only one OPE. So you take one OPE between one guy sitting there and one guy sitting there and in every possible way. So you get this new sum, which corresponds to the choice of connection you make there. And you compute these individual terms, and then you resum everything. Okay. An important point I want to make there is that remember that in this OPE, we are only going to use the anti-symmetric part in the exchange of these two operators, which means that these first-order corrections are only going to contribute to the commutator of the line operators. Now, we can do this computation, and it takes some effort, but you can perform the sum explicitly, and what you get is really, really simple. So you get these line operators, and the quantum effects are simply the insertion of these constant matrices at the endpoint of the overlap of the integration contour. Okay. Actually, this result was derived long ago in the Hamiltonian formalism by Maillet, so we are just, at that point, we have just reproduced it. There is one advantage of working with OPEs, as I did, over the Hamiltonian formalism, which is that when the endpoint on the, of the interval do overlap, there is some ambiguity in the Hamiltonian formalism because of these non-ultralocal terms. And so in the Hamiltonian formalism, one has to guess essentially the right way to deal with these ambiguities. And there is no such problem in the OPE formalism. So we can essentially derive the prescription that had to be guessed in the Hamiltonian formalism using these OPEs. So we are interested in the transfer matrices. So when we look at what happened for transfer matrices at first order, we find that the process is essentially trivial. All the first order corrections do cancel. And this is good because it means that the transfer matrix commutes. But on the other hand, it means that if we want to identify the first order correction in the process of fusion, then we have to go to second order. Okay? So if we want to go to second order, there are two ways we can get a second order correction. The first way is that we take only one OPE, but then we include the one loop correction to the current OPEs, essentially. Well, the thing is that this one loop correction are not completely known, so we cannot do this computation at that point. But anyway, this would, since we take only one OPE and the anti-symmetric part in this OPE, this would only contribute to the commutator of the transfer matrices. So hopefully this is going to be zero. It would be very nice to be able to check it. And this will postpone for future work. There is a second way in which we can get a second order correction, which is by taking two OPEs, okay? And then we only need the current OPEs at tree level, essentially. And the nice thing is that if we take two OPEs, then what we get is going to be symmetric under the exchange of the line operators, right? So this is what we are going to compute. And okay, I'll spare you the details and just give you the result. So for the symmetric fusion of transfer matrices, this is the kind of quantum correction we get at second order. It's not conceptually too complicated. So you have essentially the transfer matrices you started with, but for this guy, you have to integrate a new operator in between the connection. And this new operator that I call J tilde, schematically is just a linear combination of the currents contracted with some structure constant and with some generators. And you have another type of term. So it's, again, the transfer matrices, but this time you have to insert a constant matrix in between the connection, which is the contraction of two generators with some structure constant. So for the purpose of deriving the T-system, this is the part that is going to be interesting for us. So let me show explicitly, or at least semi-explicitly, the expression for this operator J tilde. You see that it's not exactly nice. So you see that it's of order 2. Here you recognize the structure constant, the generators, the current. And there you have this big coefficient that are a combination of the coefficients that appear in the current algebra and some function of the spectral parameter. So it's complicated. There you have the same kind of term. On top of that, there is a sum over 5 indices, and these indices essentially label Z4 gratings. So each of them can take 4 different values. So you see that it's just complicated, right? And there is no simple simplification. It's just not a nice thing. Nevertheless, we will try to use that to derive the T system. So this is the next step. So, yeah, remember what we want to show is this identity, which we understand as an operator identity between these transfer matrices that are fused together. Okay? So we consider this combination of transfer matrices taken in the representation that appear in the T system. We take them with the same value of the spectral parameter, except that we are going to shift it in the same way that the spectral parameter is shifted in the T system. So the spectral parameter Y that we are using doesn't have to be the same as this one, so the shift do not have to be 1, but delta. And moreover, we expect that this shift comes from some quantum effect, so we are going to assume that these shifts are small, now order r to the minus 2. Sorry? I don't understand what you're saying, sorry. Can you get a microphone? Maybe I can go. Ah, okay, this is just, in some version of this equation, there is shift on your one side. It's just a matter of definition of the T functions. And for me, it's just more convenient to use this this form. Yeah, so we consider this combination of transfer matrices, and the game is to find delta such that this gives zero, so that the T system is satisfied. Okay, so we are going to work perturbatively in this parameter at order minus 2. So I consider this combination that I will write in the following way. So this sum runs over the representation that are in the T system. And I make an expansion in power of r to the minus 2. So at order 0, I can neglect the fusion and I can neglect the shift. And what I get is simply going to be the combination of characters that is known to vanish. Okay? Next, at first order, I get something from the derivative expansion of these T functions, which is simply the following thing. And if I want to show that this thing vanished, then I need to show that this first order terms is going to cancel about some kind of quantum correction coming from fusion. Okay? And then I've got some higher order terms, of course, but I'm going to show that this gives indeed zero. So, so remember that I computed previously the leading quantum correction in the process of fusion of the line operators. And remember also that it was of order 2, right? Which is a priori not very good because here we want to consider something which is of order 1. But there is something nice that happens when you consider two transfer matrices for which the difference of spectral parameter is small. And the reason is that in this J tilde operator, which was this complicated beast that I showed, there are terms for which you have a denominator where the difference of spectral parameters show up. So it means that when this is small, this term is going to be bigger, so it's going to be a further one. And the second very nice thing is that for these terms, for which this enhancement happens, then it turns out that this combination of terms gives you nothing but the derivative of your flat connection with respect to the spectral parameter. So this is the term that will give us what we want. Still, we are not completely done. So when we consider this leading quantum correction, so it takes the following form. So this is my prefactor. This is my derivative of the flat connection. But it's still contracted with a complicated combination of structure constant and generators. And it turns out that for the particular set of representation that appear in the T system, I can use some very nice character identities which are going to simplify that enormously. Essentially, I will be able to replace that by single generators. And so the character identities I'm referring to have been derived in this paper of Kazakov and Viera. And the logic why I need to use this character identity, actually, it's kind of clear. So in this paper, what they did is to derive the T system for a spin chain, some of which has the same symmetry of what we're talking about. And once they have derived this T system, by just expanding the T system, they were able to derive an infinite set of character identities. We are going the other way. We start from an expansion, and from this expansion, we want to reconstruct the T system, so it is kind of natural that we have to use these character identities. So the result is that now we have simply, if you combine that with that, you got exactly the derivative of the flat connection with respect to the spectral parameter, which means that this leading quantum correction can be written simply in terms of derivative of the transfer matrix with respect to the spectral parameter with this prefactor. Okay? So now if I gather everything, so this is the quantity I started with. I want to show that it is zero. I expanded it in power of r to the minus 2. At zero order, I just get this simple quantity. And this vanishes because of the classical T-system, essentially. So this is just a character identity. Then at first order, I get two terms. One comes from the derivative expansion, and one comes from the quantum effects associated with fusion. And now it's very easy to see that this guy cancels together if I make the right choice for the shift. So this is the right choice. And then I've shown that this operator is indeed equal to zero, at least at first non-trivial order. At that point, I want to mention that it's important that divergences vanish in these transfer matrices. Because if it were not the case, then we would need to renormalize these operators, and the renormalization would depend on the representation in which they are taken, and this would destroy the balance that is needed for this computation to work. Okay, so there is one last step that we can take to write the T system in the canonical form, which is just to make a change of variable for the spectral parameter, essentially, and it's easy to see that if you define u in terms of what I worked with, so this y, in this way, then the T system is going to take this form with plus or minus 1 as shift. So that's it. I've shown the derivation from very first principle of this T system up to first non-trivial order at large dot coupling. So I come to the last part of this talk. First, let me summarize what I've been doing. So the technical part was to compute the fusion of line operator in the pure spinner string on ADS5 cos S5 up to second order in perturbation theory. And from this computation, I was able to derive the T system as an operator identity perturbatively. So if you are a bit tired after this week of conference and you don't want to remember more than one sentence from this talk, maybe it should be this one. So the shift in the T system come from quantum effect associated with the fusion of line operators. Now let me compare the approach I've presented here with the TBA approach. So there are some good things, there are some bad things. The obvious good thing is that we made no hypothesis at all. And there is another obvious good thing is that since we derived this T system as an operator identity, it's very clear that it's going to hold for all the states in the theory. Okay. Then there is some bad things. The bad thing is that our approach is increasingly perturbative. And already to get the T system at first order, it was some heavy computation. I think it would be already very difficult to go to the next order. So there, TBA is clearly better because it gives you the T system in one go, essentially. And then there are some things that essentially Matthias was referring to. So these are some byproducts of the TBA that are necessary. You need a formula to extract the energy out of your T functions. You also would like to need something to know something about the analytic properties of this function. And that requires some more work. So I think that using the approach that I presented here, you can get something. But yeah, this is some work. At least at that point, it should be clear that these two approaches are actually complementary because the weak point of the TBA become overcome with this fusion approach and reciprocally. So, yeah, I think this leaves little doubt for the validity of this set of equations. Now, let me discuss some generalization. The first one is that the same computation can be done for in other theories, namely the sigma model on the supergroup PSLN slash N. Actually, this is the first place where I did the computation. And these models are actually simpler because you don't have to worry about the coset structure. You don't have to worry about the ghost. So yeah, actually, if somebody wants to understand the details of the computation, I think it's a good idea to start there. And so it also works there, meaning that the T system is realized at first non-trivial order in these models. Actually, in that case, I can do even a bit better because the current OPEs are known to all orders in perturbation theory. So that was shown in collaboration with Sujaitchok and Jan Trost using some powerful group theory element of Bershadsky, Zhukov, and Weintraub. So since I know the current algebra better, I can do a bit better. For instance, I was able to show that there is no divergence in a transfer matrix up to second order, and also that the transfer matrix do commute up to second order. So this has some consequences, in particular for superstring in ADS3, coset3. So ADS3, coset3 can be supported by both Stramo-Ramon and Neve-Schwarz flexes. In any case, you can describe it using the hybrid formalism of Berkowitz, Waffen, and Witten. And in that case, the worksheet theory is a sigma model on PSU 1,1/2 coupled to some ghost. And a nice feature of this theory is that you can treat the ghost perturbatively. Actually, you can add them order by order on top of this sigma model. So this sigma model is one of the guys I just mentioned. So I've shown that the T system is realized in this sigma model, which means that string theory in ADS3 coset3 realizes the T system also at least up to first order in the large radius expansion and at zeroth order in the ghost expansion. So there has been some interest in integrability for string theory in ADS3 coset3, but somehow the progress have been more difficult than for ADS5 coset5. So I think that in that case, this approach can be very useful because the worksheet theory is actually simpler than for ADS5 coset5. And maybe this can be a more direct way to the solution. So it works at least in two families of theories, so for ADS5, CS5, also for this PSLN slash N sigma models. So we can try to generalize it further. If we want to do that in a systematic way, we have to look very closely at the computation and try to extract what are the important features of the model for the computation to work. And it turns out that these features are quite simple to spell out, actually. So the two main features are the following one. You need to be able to write the commutator of connections in the canonical form of this RS system. And you also need the transfer matrix to be free of any divergences. So this relies on the fact that the dual coxeter member of the symmetric group is going to cancel. And actually, there are very good chances that this works for several models that are useful to describe string theory in ADS spaces. So the obvious candidates is AGS 4 times CP3 because there the TBA analysis has been done also, and there is good confidence that the T system is also realized. But then there is also AGS 2 cross S2, AGS 3 cross S3 that I just mentioned, but also AGS 3 cross S3 cross S3. And I think you can try it for any models in the classification of the Rambo, actually. And maybe that would be also for these cases a quick way to the integrable structure of the theory. Okay, I will stop there.
Thank you very much.
Could you define in a good way, using your approach, the vacuum for short operators, really, which is not based on the big background, and to try to compute Konishi. And actually, if you compare it to the Konishi computations, is your order of approximation the same as people use for the second coefficient, like one loop correction? Is it more or less the same in spirit?
The same as?
In Konishi you have now two loops computed. Maybe the second one not from the first principles, but still two loops computed directly from the string theory in 1 over square root of lambda. Is your approximation more or less the same as it would be needed for Konishi in 1 over square root of lambda? And could you define a setup for computing loops in Konishi by your method?
So I think if you want to compute directly the dimension of the Konishi operator, then the right computation to do is the one that Valilio and Mazzucato have published already. And so do you see what I mean? Yeah, no, I don't mean.
Yeah, but he assumes that transfer matrix depends on the divided by something. Gives y.
So.
I have a question, actually. Did you have to use the Virasoro constraints somewhere?
No.
No, so it works for any states, even non physical states.
That's right. That's right. At that point, I don't need. Well, yeah. In a pure spinner, you accept that what you should work on is the cohomology of this BRST operator. But I don't need this condition for the T system to be realized. So the question you're asking is whether the transfer matrices are still going to commute at second order. And the answer, indeed, it may be that if I do this computation and I find that the transfer matrices do not commute at second order, but if I impose to work on the BRST cohomology and on the physical states, then it works. I mean, it may be the case. It will be an interesting computation. I don't know. At least at the order at which I'm computing, I don't need this kind of condition to make it work. But it raises an interesting question, which is how deep does this computation probes the quantum structure of this theory? And another fact is that essentially I don't really need the pure spinner for this computation to work. I can set them to zero and it is still going to work. So probably, I think this is a quantum computation, but it is not going very deep into the quantum structure in your model. I don't know if you're glad with this answer.
As far as I understand our work with Sasha and Valodia correctly, the main point of our work was to find the gauge when the monodromy matrix satisfies kind of Jahn-Pachter algebra, not transfer matrix, not trace. But I insist on Jahn-Pachter algebra. Have you ever tried to find this gauge for problem perturbatively. Not check the fusion relations, but check the Young-Baxter algebra.
I don't understand what gate fixing you're talking about.
Hmm?
What?
When the fusion, the transfer matrix, it traces over the Wilson loop, right?
Yes.
Traces over the monodromy matrix.
Yes.
And the transfer matrix, of course, the algebra is trivial, they commute,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
But monodromy matrix themselves, not commute, they satisfy the Young-Baxter algebra, but under the certain choice of the gauge. You see, you can do the gauge transformation, which will not affect on the traces, but will affect on commutation relations. And the main point of our works was to find such a gauge to satisfy the Young-Baxter algebra. And then all fusion relations, all this Lagrangian stuff can be just defined pure algebraic way. I don't quite understand. Either ever try to find such a gauge for this problem?
No, I don't really understand the problem you're mentioning, actually. Maybe so it's because I don't understand what you're saying.
So the
maybe
last
you can tell
comment.
Me.
This connections that you were using, it's polynomial in spectral parameter, right? This connection that you were using,
yes.
It's polynomial in the spectral parameter.
Yes.
So you were doing just perturbative calculation, which means that the level you were dealing with calculation, your transfer matrix was also polynomial in spectral parameter.
No, I'm not working perturbatively in the spectral parameter.
You look for the term which were quadratic in the connection.
What?
When are you getting these fusion relations?
Yes. So, I mean,
you. Yes. This term, this GLT, yes. Didn't you expand your Wilson loop up to second term in the connection?
No. I'm expanding up to. I'm resuming the whole theory. I'm doing.
But it was perturbative series. It was series which was going in powers of the connection.
So when I'm expanding. These line operators like that,
yes.
I work with the infinite series. I do the computation for all the terms up to n equal infinity, and then I'm able to resum everything. So it's not perturbative in this, I'm not truncated in some this sum in any way.
My question is that from previous talk, we learned that this transfer matrix has quite non-trivial analytical properties in spectral parameter. Now, my question is how I'm supposed to reconstruct those properties by using this representation.
So I don't know. I mean, the question of analytic properties is, of course, a burning one, and I don't have anything to say about it at that point.
But isn't this problem, I mean, if you're using this representation, in principle, you have well-defined definitions. You have to take trace of the quantum space of this operator.
Yeah,
you don't know quantum space because you don't know the solution to the spectral problem. So how are you supposed to answer the question about analytical properties without knowing a priori the spectral problem?
Oh, but then you are going to act with these transfer matrices on some given state, and this should constrain the analytic properties.
You don't know the states because you want to solve spectral problem, right? So the states which will be acting on this operator will be exactly the same states you want to determine by solving this fusion hierarchy.
Yes.
So if there are no further questions, let's take a round for Al again.